Hello, this is Kelly Woods, soul doula and founder of My Authentic Life. No matter what wrong turns you believe you've taken, the present moment offers a fresh start. Enjoy getting back on track with Aubrey Johnson and the Road to Rediscovery podcast.
Our lives are laid out on a road of bumps, turns, struggles, and more. How do we respond? How do we endure adversity for learning and growth? I'm Aubrey Johnson, and we'll explore these questions and more on The Road to Rediscovery. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of The Road to Rediscovery. I'm your host, Aubrey Johnson. The Road to Rediscovery is about reflecting on life lessons to learn and grow from them. And of course, pay it forward and uplift others who are struggling through dark times. Now, as you know, you can hear this show anywhere you get your podcasts worldwide. We're even on podcast platforms that you may not have even heard of or can even pronounce. Yes, if it's there, we're there. And if you happen to listen on Apple or Spotify podcasts, we invite you to leave a rate and review. And if you don't listen on Apple or Spotify, we still want your feedback. You hear me often say that feedback is a gift. And so I encourage you to shoot me an email at roadtorediscoverypodcast@gmail.com. That's roadtorediscoverypodcast@gmail.com. And we'll give you a shout out in a future episode. As always, please remember, as always, we are truly, truly grateful for your listenership. All right. Now, my special guest is an intimacy expert, a tantra teacher, conscious relating coach, and the author of No More Faking It, A Woman's Guide to Getting the Love, Pleasure, and Fulfillment She Deeply Desires. Coming from the Soviet bloc of Poland, where mentioning sex was taboo, she completely transformed and realized her mission to become the founder of the School of Intimacy and empower others in establishing and cultivating healthy relationships. Let's welcome Magda Kay to the show. Welcome, Magda, to the show. It's so great to have you here.
Wow, I feel very welcome. Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited.
Oh, well, thank you. We are equally excited and thrilled to have you. Can't wait for us to unpack this wonderful topic that deals with humanity, that deals with the very things that are innate within us to be close, to be intimate, and to have that special person in our lives that we can be intimate with, because it has such a downstream impact in a positive way, in so many other areas of our lives. So if we can just go ahead and unpack this, that would be awesome. I want to ask you, and typically I ask my hosts, I'm the host. I typically ask my guests, to share and give us a glimpse into their early days that inspired them to do the work they're doing today. But before we go into that, Magda, I would love to ask of you, because this really struck me not odd or peculiar, but it really begged the question in my head. The question about Soviet bloc Poland. What do you feel, or what do you think was the citizens' perception of sex or intimacy in a country where it was rarely, or if even discussed? What would that perception be in a country where it's not hardly discussed?
Mm-hmm. Yes. So I am from Poland, and exactly, this is the country that used to be under Soviet Union. So I was still, like, the first few years of my life was under communism. So we're out of this, but I will tell you, while I don't necessarily remember the early years, I can tell you that I recently returned to Poland. So I'm a nomad, and I spent about, like, over a decade in Southeast Asia. So I came back to Poland a year ago, and I see where we are today. Mm-hmm. And the truth is that, yes, in Eastern Europe, Central Europe, these conversations are not comfortable. People don't really have these conversations. Mm-hmm. And you can really see it also in how people interact with each other. And it's kind of funny, actually, we're talking about this because I did this one podcast in Poland and I got, it was my, the first time ever I got so bullied online. Oh, it's because, wow. Yeah. And it was a podcast about Poland in Poland.
Yeah.
And so it was, you know, directed at Polish people and I was shocked. When I said, for example, that, like I was talking about, you know, being single and happy, and the attack was that I am against marriage and that I am destroying an important institution. And it's just like, how is that even connected? So, yeah. You know, we are a Catholic country, but a Catholic country where these values are very strong. And I think for a lot of people, it is still very difficult to talk about sexuality and relationships because in some way it feels sinful.
Yeah.
We are traditional, which I actually really like because I am, you know, quite traditional myself. But it's true that these conversations are difficult for people. Of course, I don't want to be putting people in boxes. And this is, you know, we're making some generalizations here, of course. But
right.
The cultural differences, and I can see this. Yeah, having lived in Southeast Asia, I have clients from Malaysia, Philippines, India. I am aware of what it's like there, and I also see what it's like speaking to people from the US or UK,
yeah.
or people from Poland. So yes, it's definitely there. Mm-hmm. Like to be fair, I mean, again, because I left Poland, you know, quite. Like early on, and I've been traveling around. I don't actually know whether I would become who I am had I stayed in Poland. You know, I don't know if the environment here would be supporting, you know, me on this path. So who knows? Who knows what would have happened if I stayed?
Interesting. Yeah. No. Very, very, very interesting. Now, early in your journey. And I wanted to see if you can maybe clarify this for us. Were you starting to realize, I guess, just the possibilities and the potential of being a champion or advocate of intimacy, and exploring sexuality, what kind of launched that in your career or in your journey? Was it I thought I read somewhere maybe where you were studying or using tantric methods for healing and was that a springboard or how did that begin for you?
Well, let's be honest, it's not something that I dreamt of becoming. I don't know if anyone ever, when you ask a young person, yes, that this is what I want to do in the future. So it was never a plan. It was never my intention to go into this field professionally. Mm-hmm. So what happened was I was living in Malaysia at that time and my relationship ended and it was like my first proper relationship. And the reason why he started pulling away was because I wasn't having orgasms and he was taking it personally. And, you know, back in those times, we had no understanding, no tools, like just no one talked about it. We just pretended like there is no issue. But he felt it. I could feel the pressure on me as well. Mm. And so when that relationship ended, I knew that this is something I need to look at because I was kind of in a place of, okay, I can not face this and just avoid men for the rest of my life because it's so embarrassing, you know, or I can face it. And we're talking many years ago, many, many years ago. And I had heard something about Tantra. You know, these days, if you say Tantra, you can Google this and you're going to find so many things online. That was not the case back in times. Like, that just wasn't a thing, you know. So I heard something from someone. Like, a friend of a friend of a friend went to a school and they knew something. And they, you know, so it was just like, I really wanted this and I had to be patient, you know, to meet the right people who would direct me where to go next. So I went to India to study tantric yoga there, but there was nothing about sexuality and sexual healing. So I was like, wait, that's not what I'm looking for. And then eventually, again, there was a few steps in between, but eventually I ended up in a tantric community in Thailand. And so this is where I really dove deep into these practices. And we're talking all for my own sexual healing. I knew I needed healing. I needed to release some things. Like I was blocked. Yes. Still not thinking about me ever doing this professionally.
Right.
But the more I was going into those teachings, the more I was understanding how little we know. And this is where, you know, I have a little bit of beef with like traditional approach to sexuality and like sexologists because I mean, I know the intention is good, but when this is the only knowledge and tools that you're exposed to, then you're not actually able to help people because like what I realized learning tantra and sacred sexuality is that what like the Western world knows about human sexuality, that's maybe like 30-40% of what's actually out there. So there's so much that's unexplored. There's such a limited definition and understanding of sexuality. So I was just like, oh my God, it's like people need to know this. And people were, you know, coming to me with questions because they could see that I live in this weird community and like, what is it that you guys do there? And they could see the change and transformation in me. And so it just very naturally kind of became a thing that I started doing, eventually growing into, well, this just being my proper job, if you want to use the word.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense, Magda. And I appreciate you clarifying that, you know, and, you know, I completely agree. When people are young, say they're just graduating from high school, you know, roles like this, and doing things like this professionally, I don't think is on anyone's radar at that young of an age to say, yes, this is what I'm growing to aspire to be. You know, I mean, I remember as a kid, you know, I reached for the stars, and I'm sure a lot of other children have as well. I wanted to be a baseball player. You know, I had a cousin who was, you know, when she was 6 years old, you ask her what she wanted to be when she grew up, she said a cowgirl, you know? And so, and then there was another girl when I was in first grade, she wanted to become a princess, you know?
Oh, well, I mean, I'm with her. Like when I was a kid, I actually wanted to be a star. And I remember my father once tells me, he's like, you know, Magda, but it takes a lot of work to become like a famous actress. And I said, I don't want to be an actress. I want to be a star.
A star, right? not the star actress, a star, a just real a star.
that's so it's amazing. Very close to being a princess. So, hey.
yeah. And it's that childhood curiosity, right? And that childhood inspiration that makes us at that age boldly say, hey, this is what I want to be, you know? And of course, in the practical sense, as an adult, you know, someone may have a question mark over their head and say, really, you know, a cowgirl, a princess, a star, princess. You know, but it's that amazement and awe and wonder that a child has at that age, you know? And then as we get older, we start to become kind of, I don't know, we get kind of set in practicality. Okay. So when it comes time to graduate, oh, I'm going to be a doctor, or I'm going to be a lawyer, or I'm going to be a computer operator, or I'm going to code, or whatever, you know, I'm going to be a bus driver or own a restaurant, you know. And so that practicality sets in to where, you know, we're not thinking about really extraordinary roles such as this, and by your journey and things that you were doing to help yourself, you know, as a result of what came out of your relationship in Malaysia, you know, that is, it's amazing where life can take us when we're just trying to find something to grow and help within ourselves, to where we find the inspiration to become something bigger to help others, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and I'd love to share something with you. So this is a bit of like a realization I had a few years ago. So you know how often when we ask people, why do you do what you do? And we all try to explain how, oh, I want to help people. And we try to sound like we're so just selfless and it's all about helping others. And I'm just like, really? And so here's how I look at things. If you think of a tree wants to be the biggest tree it can be, right? It just wants to grow. If you look at nature, like if the seed drops even on the rock, it will find a way to get the roots and grow. And like every tree tries to be the biggest. Now, if you were to ask a tree, why do you want to be a big tree? Do you think a tree would ever tell you that, oh, I want to be so big because I want to give oxygen to animals and humans so they can live? Like, no. All the tree is focused on is being the best tree, the best version of itself. Yeah. And then nature takes care of of the rest, of the impact. So I strongly believe that it's perfectly okay to follow what we could call selfish desires and selfish ambitions, because I really do believe that the way the reality is constructed is that every person, by becoming the best version of themselves, is going to have a massive impact on the whole world and other people. But you don't have to worry about this. Like, you don't have to pretend that this is the reason why you're doing something, because truth is, let's be honest, it's not really. It gives us sense of validation, and it's okay. Like, be honest, like, you do it for yourself because you want to be a princess. Be honest about this. And the way that life operates is that you becoming the best version of yourself, you following your selfish dreams, it will have a positive impact on other people. And so I'm a big proponent of just like connecting people to their like literally selfish desires. Because I feel like so many people are not going for what they want because they don't want to seem selfish. And I'm just like, just be selfish. And trust me, it's going to be positive for the whole world.
Yes. You know what? I tell you, Magda, that is a tremendously candid and transparent response, right? And I appreciate that because that's a fresh air of just quite simply a fresh air of level setting, reality. We are initially reaching out to help ourselves, to better ourselves. And in such a way, nature and the universe works in such a way that, you know, the very act of us doing something to help ourselves can benefit other people. And if we had the wherewithal and the security within ourselves to say, I do what I do because I want it to, you know, validate what I know, what I can contribute, you know, and I want it to make myself better. You know, it's okay to say that because it will eventually down the line benefit other people. So I appreciate that rather candid and and transparent response because, you know, when we all look at ourselves, there are selfish reasons why we initially embark on endeavors such as these, right?
Yeah. You know, Aubrey, I say this because, again, like, you know, I, of course, listen to a lot of podcasts. Like, I love learning. And I try to listen to a lot of people in my industry to get some insights. And so often I hear from people who are coaches or therapists, and they say, oh, I do this because I want to help people. And I'm like, if you really just wanted to help people, you can go on the street and help homeless people. There is a reason why you're doing this work that pays you, that maybe gives you online visibility. It's both. It's not that if I do this for myself, that means that I don't care about other people. I do care. It's just that I also care about myself. You know, I think that element is there. And I think it's helpful to just like accept this about yourself because it will help you follow your dreams. And, you know, I will say, yes, I feel very lucky that the way my life happened is it allowed me to reinvent myself because I was in business, I was doing marketing, and now I'm here. And, you know, being back in Poland, one of the things I'm doing is I'm taking acting classes. So who knows, maybe that dream to be a star.
That's great.
Will still happen.
Yeah, but you'll be the star that your father was referring to at the time, right?
Yes. Yes, the star that actually needs to do some work. Oh,
yeah, yeah. Oh my goodness. This is absolutely, absolutely delightful. One thing you mentioned that kind of resonated with me, and it's an astounding number, I believe, and I hope I get this number right, but what you were sharing in Western society, really getting or understanding or grasping onto like 35 to 40% of truly what intimacy and sexuality is. I want to ask about that. Why is it that low of a number that Western society kind of gets or kind of explains? Is it because there's, I feel, in Western society there's this tap dance, right, between being intimate and exploring sexuality and tap-toeing between that and basically, quite honestly, morality, you know? And so there are things that, you know, from a political sense, and I don't mean political as in the government, I mean political as far as, you know, what you should and should not do when it comes to exploring sex. And there's a lot of, moral caveats kind of get in the way of the true exploratory. But there's a way, I can't help but think there's a way that we can talk about sex and intimacy in a healthy way, okay, that doesn't infringe on morality, that doesn't encourage immorality or infidelity. I mean, what is it that's mm-hmm. getting the Western hemisphere this type of low percentage in getting it?
So there is a few things, and everything mm-hmm. you shared, I fully agree with that. So I think first problem is the fact that for us, sexuality or intimacy means an intercourse. So notice that I very often use the word sexuality and not sex.
Yes.
Because I mean something way bigger than just an intercourse.
Yes.
And usually in the West, like even when you say like, oh, we were intimate, you mean we had sex. And by we had sex, you mean an intercourse. So it really limits the experience. When I talk about sexuality, I can talk about a person who is a virgin or who is celibate. You can still be sexual even if you're not engaging with someone.
Right.
If you understand the full concept of sexuality. So that's number one. Mm-hmm. Number two, it's exactly what you said about the morals. So there is still this kind of understanding that if we think of someone sexually liberated, we think of someone who is very promiscuous and who sleeps around. And that's not true. So I make a distinction between being sexually empowered and sexually liberated. Being sexually empowered is literally that. Yes, I can go and I can have sex with whoever I want because I own my desire. But sexual liberation is different. So sexual empowerment is about feeling empowered to go for what you want. So it's your ability to say yes. Yeah. This is especially true for women who, you know, it's like a woman would never say directly that she wants sex.
Right.
So she is vague around this. So for a woman to just be honest and direct, mm-hmm. that's sexual empowerment. Mm. Sexual liberation is about being able to say both yes and no.
Gotcha.
Meaning that if I don't want to engage in something or I don't mm-hmm. want to have sex, mm-hmm. I will say no. Mm-hmm. So that doesn't mean that I sleep around. I can be celibate for 10 years if I want to, and I can still be sexually liberated.
Right.
Because if I want something, I will say yes to it. But if I don't want it, I will say no. So it's not the same as being promiscuous. And I think people are confusing these.
Yeah.
People think that if we start talking about sexuality, it means we are sleeping around and we're cheating and attending sex parties and God knows what else. And we go to the extreme of, like you mentioned, immorality and things that right. to us seem very inappropriate, as in like it's so black and white, and it's not. So we're kind of not giving space to things in between. But mm-hmm. then the main thing that I see is that in the West, we are stubbornly believing that the only reality that exists is the things that we can touch and things we can see. And it's a bit funny because, well, we all kind of know that, you know, Wi-Fi exists and radio exists and we can't see it.
Right.
But if I tell you that, hey, you have sexual energy, they'll be like, yeah, no.
You're right. They would say no, but then, you know, there are some things that there are some intangibles with sexual energy that kind of translate or metamorphosize to tangible.
Exactly. So this is for me the missing link. And I think a great example of how the West likes to look at things, and I don't know if you've like seen this, but there is like this whole almost a movement that is trying to explain what love is just in terms of the chemicals in your brain.
Yeah.
And all I'm thinking is, what are you guys doing? Are you crazy? Like, love is one of the most beautiful things we have.
Yes.
It has inspired the most incredible, like, creation, you know, poems, books, movies.
Music,
and you want to just, like, limit it to, like, a chemical cocktail in our brain? What are you doing? Why do you have to strip love? Why do you have to take away the magic?
Are they making it scientific? Too scientific?
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
And that's what I'm missing. And it's like, if you're only looking at sexuality, human sexuality, through like this medical perspective, you will never be able to understand what sexuality is, just like you cannot understand what love is just by looking at the chemicals that your brain produces.
Right.
It's so much more. So for me, this is the missing element, because I, for example, I talk about energy orgasm and energy sex. Yeah. I talk about energy healing. I talk about sexuality types. You will never hear a sexologist talk about any of that because they don't believe it. They have never experienced this because if you don't believe it's possible, you cannot experience that. I have experienced this.
Yeah,
I have hundreds of people, friends and clients who have experienced this.
Yeah.
You know, and it's sort of like, you know, if you've never been in love, you can make a claim that love doesn't exist. But it takes anyone who has been in love to say like, darling, love is real. You just haven't felt it. And it's same here. Most people haven't experienced this deeper energy, spiritual sexuality. So they think it doesn't exist. It's not that it doesn't exist. It's just that you haven't experienced it. You haven't opened yourself for it.
Yes, I see. You know, that right there is just 1,000% clarification on the differences and how, you know, you can be sexually liberated and it doesn't mean that you're promiscuous and you are you have transgressions and follow infidelity and that sort of thing, right? It doesn't mean those sorts of things. I mean, just your clarity between sexual empowerment and liberation, crystal clear. And in what the Western Hemisphere is getting and not getting, again, crystal clear. And you know, how do we explain what that more is that goes beyond any chemical shock waves that you see in the brain, you know, what's it called, serotonin and all the scientific type reactions that someone feels in their brain and their heart with chemical flow, you know, when love starts to take place or sexuality. But it's more than that. To your point, it sounds like the only way you can explain how much that more is if you experience it.
So this is a bit of a catch 22 because yes, it's we're talking about something that's very experiential. It's hard to just explain it with words.
Yes.
Again, how can you explain what happiness is or joy is or love is without really feeling this? So we're in the same situation. The way I approach it is like this. First of all, when we get older, we naturally our sexuality changes. We need intimacy more. And I work with men a lot and very often they come to me when they're like,
Yeah.
Well, 40 already, but like 50 plus for sure. Mm-hmm. And they tell me that, oh, like I don't get turned on as easily. And I'm like, right. Yeah, because it changes. You need more intimacy and sensuality. So they naturally become, when we get a bit older, we naturally become more curious and interested in those more subtle, let's say, experiences of sexuality. Women seem to be interested in this from the beginning. It's not because, again, you know, our hormones work a bit differently.
We don't
have, like, you know, this horny phase.
Yeah.
So we're always kind of more interested in that intimate aspect. But this is when people naturally are looking for something that goes beyond just the physical act of sex. So that's number one. The second thing is that when I explain this to people, the way I would approach it is I tell them, listen, like when you laugh, right? When you laugh at something, like you're laughing, can you tell me which part of your body is laughing? And it's like, no, because it's like, you're just laughing. It's like the whole body experience. And it's not just physical. Yes, you may have contractions in your belly, like you feel the muscles if you laugh really hard. There's something more, right? It's like this energy. Or if you've ever taken, you know, any drugs or work with medicine, like, again, you will, you know, there's this feeling, it's the energy. So you do understand, we all understand what it means, what it feels like to have certain energy. All emotions are energy. And so this is no different. And so I find, like, going from this angle, for many people, it makes sense. But I will say, and Aubrey, I feel like you probably can relate to this, and I'm sure your guest in some way may have touched on the two. We change when the pain of not changing becomes unbearable. And so as long as people have okay intimate life, like they may not be really happy, but they feel okay, they're not really going to have that motivation to act and look for something different. Like I was desperate, right, when I was looking for the answers. To be fair, like with that breakup, I was suicidal. I tried to hurt myself a couple of times. Like it really hit me hard. So I was desperate. Mm-hmm. If I wasn't, I'm not sure what would happen, but I was desperate. And so the question is that for many people, if they think of it, it's like, oh, I could explore sexuality more, but it's so uncomfortable. It's so scary. I'm fine staying where I am. So people who do explore those depths of human sexuality usually are people who feel a burning desire to explore more. And it's just the reality that not all people will feel this, you know. And we all learn not to impose our views and not try to force anyone to see something. So it's more like, when a person is open and curious, that's when they start searching and finding people like me. And I hope that slowly, slowly, you know, one person at a time, one couple at a time, we can make a difference in how we approach sexuality. But to be fair, I think it's still, you know, it's going to take a long time because overall our planet is really sexually suppressed. So I think it's a bit of a slow progress.
It will be a very slow, gradual climb, I would imagine. And, you know, you touched on a couple things. I mean, for one, as we get older, complacency starts to be our new comfort, you know, and that can have substantial, you know, impacts. With putting relationships in jeopardy, or maybe our own health in jeopardy, you know, depending on what that complacency is. And one thing you said that, I wish we can repeat it for the people up there in the cheap seats there. But I have this recorded, so I get to play it back soon to hear it again. Hugely impactful. You said, and I'm going to paraphrase, so I'm sure I'm going to get it wrong, but someone stops doing nothing when doing nothing becomes so unbearable, or something like that.
Yes. So we change when the price for not changing becomes unbearable. So there is this element of really being pushed to the extreme.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely profound, Magda. And another clarification you gave early on is, you know, people's interpretation of sex or intimacy or being close or being intimate is in a lot of people's mind, intercourse. So when you say I slept with someone or we slept together, immediately the assumption goes to intercourse. And intimacy and closeness is not just intercourse. I have a personal vested impact on this because as a man, you know, and you said you see a lot of men as clients. As a man, you know, when we think of intimacy, men actually do think of intercourse, you know, those who haven't had the proper coaching, right? So
no, you're right. Yes, this is like the old state. Yes.
Yeah. And so I'm saying that to say that one of the reasons I think men are immediately go to that, besides just how their mind's wired, is because in so many aspects of a man's life, things are performance based, right? I hope I'm not sounding, inappropriate or out of place, but performance based. And so, you know, part of a man's, for lack of a better term, machismo, you know, is it's that aura of alpha. It's that aura of being a man. In a lot of men's mind is how they perform, and it could be, you know, performance based with how you do your job, because you have to be on, you know, you have to be at a high performance level with your job so you can provide for your family. And then of course, performance based, you know, sexually. And so, you know, when you have men, let's say like me, who are in their mid 50s and like 7 years ago was diagnosed with prostate cancer, and then, you know, had to have their prostate removed. And then of course starts this whole domino effect, right? Of medical things where you have to kind of take that road back to your, I don't know, in some cases you feel like a shadow of yourself, you know, before you were diagnosed, because of all the things that you had to go through to survive from prostate cancer. Now there's these, I don't know, I don't want to call them side effects, but these results that come out of it, to where to explore sexuality and intimacy is going to look different, I guess is what I'm getting at. And for it to look different, and for men to have acceptance of that, you know, it takes a very trusting partner for a man to be vulnerable to where they're not judged, and to where men stop hanging themselves up with performance base, so they can open themselves up to true intimacy and closeness. I don't want this to be an individual selfish type discussion, but I think there's a lot of men in general that come from that space.
So Aubrey, thank you so much for sharing this. And yes, I do believe I see this, men being under a lot of pressure in many areas of life. It's exactly this, you need to perform. And not just that, there is this pressure that you should perform at your best, but we're not gonna give you any tools for that. We're not gonna support you, you just need to know this. And this really leaves men in terms of sexuality in a very tricky place, because, you know, men usually don't ask women what you want, because men think that, oh, no, I have to already know. Like, otherwise I'm not good if I need to ask you, I should already know. And like, how can you know? How can you know? Mm-hmm. And this is a problem, because then women totally outsource their pleasure to a man, which is not healthy. No. Women don't speak up about what they want. And this is another big issue, because exactly all of this conditioning. Mm-hmm. And And then there is, so in Tantra, some of the practices that I think are really beautiful and I recommend for couples is it's around de-sexualizing our genitals. So there's a lot of pressure on our, we call it sex center, so on our genitals, and especially for men, like, you know, all of the shame around, you know, am I big enough? And it's, by the way, it's crazy how often I hear from men this, that the bigger, the better. And it comes from pornography. And I remember I was speaking to one of my former partners, telling him, babes, no, trust me, it's not that the bigger, the better.
No, it needs
to just be the right match. And he would fight me on this. And I'm just like, I am telling you this. Like, why are you not believing me? So there's a lot of this conditioning, which means that men will have a lot of expectations and shame on their genitals. And then there's expectation, I need to have an erection, I need to last long enough, I need to come, and all of this, I need to please her. And so it's a beautiful practice to treat the genitals of our partner as any other part of the body. So think, for example, you know, you can lie next to each other, you can touch each other's arms and play with their face. But like, we only touch the genitals if we want to have sex. Again, intercourse, meaning we touch the genitals only when they need to do a job, right?
Right.
And so if we can just touch our, like, the genitals of our partner in a non-sexual way, like cupping them or just like holding your hand there, it's really good. Like, it's a healing process. Again, it desexualizes our genitals, just kind of allows us to feel accepted, because you are a worthy man and a worthy lover, regardless of how your genitals are performing. Like, come on, there's like, you are a whole being. So there's way too much pressure and meaning added to this. I also tell couples, like, one of the main things I always ask them to, like, about 80% of issues around sexuality, I will have this answer for them. And it's to start exploring intimacy and sensuality, which exists before oral sex and before penetration. Like, actually explore each other, be playful, touch each other. Like, notice how much there is that doesn't require you to perform. Right? Because then we can let go of that pressure. But absolutely, I agree with you. It is a big problem. Both men and women are under pressure. It just looks differently for us. But yes, definitely. And I think it's also, it's a pity, because definitely for men, if you're so focused just on your performance, you're actually missing the joy, because you're not present in the moment. And very often this is when your partner kind of feels like sex wasn't really good, because you can't feel her when you're so focused on what I have to do and am I a good lover or not. You're not actually present with what you feel and what she feels. So you're kind of, by definition, not intimate with your partner.
That makes sense, because you're not in the present moment. And when you're not in the present moment and you're so focused and wrapped up on performance, it's really defeating the purpose in a way. That makes a lot of sense. And this exercise you mentioned, desexualizing our genitals, it's mind-blowing to me. I can't believe it, because you're right. When people are close and they're touching each other's face and ear and shoulders, and when they get to the genital areas, then it starts to imply, okay, we're touching this because we wanted to get ready for sex. Well, let's treat it like any other part of the body that I would touch: my partner's face, my partner's shoulder, and then cup and touch the genital part, you know, without it implying that sex has to happen. And explore that type of intimacy, and that helps, at least in my mind, it would help to be in the present moment when you're doing that, right?
Yes. It helps to recondition the mind that, like, oh, I can receive pleasure, I can be intimate, and I can connect my partner, and it doesn't mean that I have to do something. There's no expectation of my body doing anything specific as the next step.
No,
so it's really, really healing, and it really expands the experience of connection with our beloved.
I understand. Magda, this is absolutely tremendous. I mean, I can't believe here I am at 56, never heard of anything like this, and it makes all the sense in the world. And you just gave me the very tip of the iceberg, and there's so much more to explore. But thank you for sharing that as an example for the benefit of the listeners, and can I say for the benefit of myself in my enrichment and knowing. So it brings me to this question, and I think you answered it, okay? But so many walks of life, so many people with so many different backgrounds, so many different emotional states, okay? There are people who have, there are people who have ADD, or they may be autistic or on the spectrum, you know, again, people with different situations in their lives, medically and socioeconomically. With all that said, the general question, and I hate to be general, but the general question here is, do all people have the ability to be intimate?
Yes, absolutely. So,
okay.
The way I define intimacy, okay, maybe step back. You said this before, right? That intimacy, it's not just intercourse, it's so much more. Right. Mm-hmm. So people often use this as synonyms. And I say intimacy and sex is not the same. Mm-hmm. Sex is what you do. Intimacy is how you do it. So for me, the definition of intimacy is how deeply do you experience life, everything about life. So if I'm happy, how deeply am I happy? Like how happy am I? Mm-hmm. If I'm sad, how much do I allow myself to feel the sadness? Mm-hmm. If I have a desire, how much do I allow myself to feel it? Mm-hmm. If there is pleasure, how much do I allow myself to feel it? So how deep do I go into the experience of being alive? Mm-hmm. And so by definition, everyone can have it. And there is no limit to how intimate we can be. This is also how intimacy is not about sex. It's like it we ideally would want intimacy to be present in our sex life, but it's like, you know, you're intimate with your friends, with your family. So it's about like how much alive do you feel? Like how alive are you? And again, there's no limit because you can always go deeper, you can always feel more. So I won't even tell, I don't like looking at life as like black and white thing. It's not like some people are intimate and other people are not intimate. The question is, again, how intimate are you, right? What's the depth of your intimacy?
How
what
intimate?
Can you do to go deeper?
That's right.
Like you can always go deeper. Yeah.
Yeah. No, that makes a lot of sense. And life isn't just black and white. You're right. I mean, there's intimacy in the sense that we've been talking about, but there's also intimacy in, say, that you have with your dog, or with a baby, or with your mother, or, you know, two brothers or two sisters. You know, they're intimate because, you know, they share the same parents. They've grown up and known each other their whole lives. So there's a level of intimacy there between them that's a bond, right?
Yes.
And so intimacy is not necessarily, it's not sexual, but like you said, when you're being sexual, there should be some intimacy in there. But when we're talking intimacy, we're talking intimacy at a closeness, at a level of closeness. I think there are types of intimacy that if you practice and work with it and be in the presence of practicing that intimacy, it can help you in your other forms of intimacy throughout other people you interact with, right? Like we said before, our siblings, our parents, our dogs, our pets. Is that right? Is it true? Or?
Yes. And I actually think it's very important because see, because we equate intimacy with sex or with a romantic relationship, it actually makes people, like, it has a few really negative consequences. So first, people who are single, they will rush into having sex or rush into a relationship because they will assume this is the only way for them to have intimacy. That can often be really unhealthy. This also means sometimes you will stay in unhealthy, unhappy, or even abusive relationships, because again, in our mind, this is the only way I can get intimacy. And let's remember, intimacy is a basic human need, meaning we need this to survive, or we will die without it, right? So we have the instinct to search for intimacy. But if we have this wrong understanding of where to find it, that's what we do. And so very often people like think, I'm single. And so people will be like, oh, you don't have any intimacy. And I'm like, I do. I am very intimate with myself. I have a very, very deep relationship with myself. I have a very deep relationship to life, to the universe, to God. I have very close relationship with my friends and my family. I have so much, like I have more intimacy in my life than a lot of people who are in relationships. And so I think it's really healthy to separate it.
Exactly.
Yeah, because regardless of your relationship status, there are so many ways to source that sense of deep connection. And like you said, I like the word bond, that bond with other people and exactly with your pets, with nature. Yes. Like, you know, can you actually look at the sun and feel the bond with the sun?
Right.
Or that's when you're drinking energy. Coffee, right?
Yes. Yes. That's the energy. It's something you can't explain, but you feel and you're receiving from that person, from that pet, from that object, right? And you're projecting energy to that person, that pet, that object. They feel it. And you're in synergy then, right? And so it's an absolute beautiful thing that you really can't explain, but you can definitely feel. Magda, this has been an absolute, absolute delight of a conversation. You have shared some amazing insights and clarifications when it comes to things like being you know, sexually empowered, as well as liberated, and the difference between the two. And then, of course, this desexualizing our genitals is part of one of the tantra studies, I believe. It's just absolutely, I mean, again, very, very eye-opening, very enriching for the listeners. I can't thank you enough for coming on the show. How can the listeners follow you, learn more about your great work, maybe even enroll in the School of Intimacy and pick up a copy of your book?
So the easiest thing, you can just put Magda K in Google. It's okay. MAGDAKAY. So pretty much anything you're going to find there, it's going to be me. I always joke, there's one other Magda K online who is a DJ. I am not a DJ.
So, you're not a DJ, okay.
No, anything about music, this is not going to be me. Anything else you'll find, it's going to be me.
Gotcha.
The website is magdak.com. You can find me on YouTube. This is my main channel.
Okay.
So you can get a lot of content there. And on Instagram, magdak official. But again, just put magdak in Google in your search, and you will find all of the links. Yes.
Awesome. That's wonderful. We're going to make sure that we include as many of those links as we can in our episode show notes, so our listeners can click the link, go directly to you, click that follow, click that notification button while listening to this wonderful, wonderful conversation. Magda, I can't thank you enough for coming on the show. I truly, truly enjoyed our conversation. I've learned a lot. I have no doubt the listeners learned a lot. And I would love for us to stay connected and have you on the show at a future time if you're willing.
I would love that. Like you said, we just scratched the surface.
We just scratched the surface, right? And so there's more to talk about. There's more to be said. And we definitely need a sequel for sure, right?
But thank you so much for having me. And if I can just leave the last word, it's back to what you said when you talked about intimacy. It's this energy that we feel. So again, unless we allow ourselves the idea that energy exists, we can't actually experience full intimacy. And this is where so many people in the West are. If we refuse the concept that there is something beyond the physical, we are refusing all these beautiful opportunities to go deep. So my main invitation is for anyone listening from this whole episode is just open yourself up. This idea of energy, what if there is energy? What if there is sexual energy? How, you know, how could that just be in your life. If that thing was true, that would be my main invitation and a piece of advice for anyone listening.
Strong, strong words to the wise, and very, very, very well said. Magda, thank you so much. Those are, it's profound advice. So make sure you listeners listen and heed this advice and consider that energy. Magda, again, a pleasure having you on the show. Thank you. Thank you so much. And I want to thank all of you for tuning in and listening. And hey, look, you may feel like this at times, but in our daily struggles and adversities, there's always hope, and you're never alone. I humbly ask that you please share this show with someone you know, someone you love, who needs motivation, inspiration, and support. And you know, when it all comes down to it, we're all just roadies on this journey of life. But it sure feels good having you on the road with me. Thank you all for listening. We'll chat again soon. We really hope you enjoyed this episode of The Roads Rediscovery. We'd love to hear from you. Shoot us an email at roadsrediscoverypodcast@gmail.com and leave us any questions or comments you may have.